This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So I'd like to welcome you, Misha. Thanks for being with us. And thank you for bringing your gift of beauty through flowers. I hope you all enjoy them as you move around the campus. And I'm looking at the screen, and I just told Ross that I'm really scared. Because joining us this morning from Madison is a dear friend of mine and mentor, Tyson Deoverkailan. Welcome, Tyson. So what's coming around are the 12 links of dependent arising. That particular visual comes from a friend of mine, Dharma sister, Beth Jacobs, who wrote the book Abhidharma, the original Buddhist psychology. So I want to thank her for letting me pilfer. Yesterday, I felt something start to, before I do that, could you share your poem with us, Tim?
Oh, yeah.
Before I forget.
Left it in my jacket. Can I go get it?
Okay.
Does everybody get one?
We did yesterday afternoon, we did a breakout sessions where we've been talking about the basis of, the spark of the talk is the Buddhist comment about seeing you house builder, you're not going to build the house again, taking down the rafters and the ridge poles. And you can read it.
Although the wind blows terribly here, the moonlight also leaks between the roof planks in this ruined house. Isomi Shikibu, around the year 1010. When he talked about this yesterday, it made me think of that.
Thank you. So we, in groups of two, we examined and then shared, the components about what might go into our house, what that might look like, the sense of self. And then individually, people reflected on elements of their house. And I felt something moving. I'm still feeling it. So there's an energy moving. I think we might tap on something in Sesshin that can be really interesting. So we practice carefully, attentively, intimately, and see what happens. In this sharing, in the movement, so we went from, we talked about this sort of rigid language in this quote, And in our process, we started looking into the empty nature of these houses, right? So the empty nature of self. And what I was also hearing was, you know, dependent arising, this existing, that existing, this no longer exists, that no longer exists. As you were looking into your houses, you discovered, oh, the conditions for that at that point in time, in a certain point in time, are no longer there. Right? And something else has come along, this flowing dynamic of this house. So today, I thought we'd look at, you know, what the, you know, so we're talking about a sense of selfing, right? We're not talking, the Buddha said, you know, when we look into the nature of things, we don't see an I. We don't see a you. But Stephen Batchelor said that's been mistakenly interpreted as no self. So we look as what we're looking into, what we're coming into, is in this dynamic is selfing, the continual rising and flowing, causing and conditions that shape and feed and change this thing, this self here. Although the Buddha, when asked directly, "Is there a self?" he refused to answer, because he didn't want to get into the metaphysical dynamics. And so, you know, the Buddha offered up, you know, in his teaching, you know, how we can come in and be alive in this process, in this dynamic. And that was his primary concern. Come here, come back, come right here, right now. And, you know, it's the same thing we hear coming down through the ancestors, come back, come here, right now, Dogen. Be here right now. And so the 12 links of dependent arising, you know, that's, you know, the Buddha, let me back up a little bit. The Buddha, he talked about his primary concern was suffering and the cessation of suffering, right? And so, you know, starting out about with the Four Noble Truths, and as I was fumbling around, looking around at stuff, I came upon, you know, usually the formation of the Four Noble Truths starts with the first, second, third, and fourth, right? That's the way we normally hear it. But what I came upon is that in his first sermon, the introduction of the Four Noble Truths, and he intended it to be a teaching of the middle way. He starts actually with the fourth noble truth. And when I think about the fourth noble truth, right understanding or right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. He's taken us into this awareness, the relational awareness of existence, the relational nature of that, and the relational nature of this practice, what it's waking us up to. He's setting the middle way right into the relational dynamics, what making us aware right then and there. And so the relational, you know, is when we talk about suffering, it's not only suffering that we cause ourselves, but what we call is caused to others. And to understand the nature of the pattern of suffering in dependent arising. Okay? So the first noble truth is there is suffering. I don't hide from that word. It's often interpreted as dissatisfaction or dis-ease. And I think that the word suffering encompasses those. It's a spectrum. But stuff happens, right? It happens. And it hurts. And so then there's the response to the suffering, to the experience, right? That's so we're seeing into the cause of suffering, the response. So he talked about the two arrows. There's the first arrow, and then the second arrow is what we add to it. And what we add to it is our conditioned response to experience, which we'll get into here shortly. Primarily, craving and attachment. And there, right in there, we're getting into the arising of selfing. Craving and attachment. And then, seeing into the cessation of suffering. And so as we see into the dynamics, we become more alive to bringing awareness to. But the cessation is ultimately through the Eightfold Path. He also talked about the five aggregates, the five baskets, the five heats, form, feelings, perceptions, habit formations or impulses, and consciousness. And that will run his examination of those dynamics will run from here on through Yogacara, as does the thread of dependent arising. These dynamics, we start thinking about these things in terms of dependent arising. That the nature of rising and falling away. So you'll hear those elements here in the 12 links. You'll hear them in you hear them in the language throughout, actually. So starting with ignorance, we're ignorant. We're ignorant of what follows. We're ignorant of what causes suffering. What causes suffering to us, to others, in our especially of our ignorance and our dynamics, and what it happens to others. And then karmic formations. We began to talk about those yesterday. Karmic formations, elements of the house. Karmic formations, habit formations, how they get set up. One very basic dynamic, and we'll come back to it again here shortly, is that basic tendency towards dualistic thinking, the it is and it is not. Then the consciousness, mentality, materiality, the six sense bases, and contact, feeling, craving, clinging, existence, birth, old age, and death. I want to touch on what Batchelor has to say about mentality, materiality, or name form, nama rupa. And he says this is often, this has come to be, interpreted or defined as mind and body. But he says there is no and in there, and there's actually, in the Buddhist discussion of it, there's actually no mind, because there's, you know, there's no consciousness in here yet. And we'll get back to that, because consciousness precedes, right? Touching, feeling, perception, intention, attention, says Gautama, this is nama, name. These are the nama factors, as they are called, include the five bundles, feeling, perception, and inclination, intention, but add two more, touch and attention. Touch in Pali is also phasa, a form of verb of the verb fusati, to touch, and thus a cognitive of padihaba, what is touched. The cluster of touch words shows that nama rupa is always a condition of contact, of being in touch, which further undermines the dualistic idea of mind in here, of a mind in here coming into contact with a physical world. In echoing tactical sensation, touch points to the broader experience, the broader experiential sense of being in touch with the world through each of the senses. So if consciousness is not in there, Batchelor asks, so how does consciousness come about? Gautama explains in the next line, with the arising of name form, there is the arising of consciousness. Consciousness emerges out of the entire complex of interactions between an organism and its environment. Consciousness cannot be said to be the exclusive product of either something physical, whether an external sense object or a brain, or something mental, whether a feeling, perception, or inclination. Gautama recognizes that consciousness is a seamless whole that is not equivalent to the sum of its part, much in the same way that a hand is not reducible to the sum of its fingers, skins, bones, nerves, and muscles. To know something, the defining quality of consciousness differs from merely perceiving something, the quality of perception, because it is a holistic awareness in which all the nama factors of touch, feeling, perception, intention, attention, and attention are integrated. By implication, for Gautama, there is no such thing as pure consciousness, an unconditioned or pristine knowing that exists independently of the phenomenal world of discrete physical things and mental processes. But then he adds, but this causality that he's talking about is not quite so straightforward. Gautama rejects a simplistic, one-directional view of causality, of either consciousness causing name form or name form causing consciousness. The same passage concludes with his recognition that the experience of life entails having consciousness with name form as its condition and name form with consciousness as its condition. He understands each to be a condition for the other. They are interdependent. So that also gives us a sense of the dynamic of these links, this interdependency back and forth between the links. And he's also, it's interesting to me, as he's discussing name form, he's already into the fifth link here. It seems, six senses, or at least there's the setup there. You see the sort of the fluid dynamic of it. There's no hard and fast line here. And then coming into contact, the arising, but you know, are the as we just heard, the arising, you know, how this sense, you know, the being, this embodied awareness, this embodied response to experience, with consciousness then in there too, coming in there too. So that this is, you know, the embodied experience here, the whole organism responding, right? I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit into tomorrow, going into Dan Siegel's book, the the Developing Mind. He describes this very well, this dynamic of coming into contact. When one of us speaks to another, the voice box stimulates the movement of the air molecules manifested as kinetic energy. The eardrum responds to this flow, energy flow, by creating an electrochemical energy movement within the acoustic nerve and downstream neural circuits of the brain. Ions flow in and out of the neural membranes, and the release of chemical transmitters activates downstream neurons. When these patterns of neural firing match with prior learning, this energy flow has informational value, and the listener can understand what the speaker has said. But we also, you know, so there's just that basic understanding, but we also just imagine for a minute the conditioned patterns coming in there. The energy exchange from, who knows, you know, as, let's say I'm talking to Misha, we're talking. And how her system is taking, you know, what's arising in response to what's coming from me, my habit patterns, and then back and forth. Siegel says, when we examine what is known about how the mind develops, we gain an important insight into the ways in which people can continue to grow throughout life. The mind does not stop developing, even as we grow past childhood. I've got the wrong quote here. Just a minute. To put it simply, human conceptions shape neural connections, and each contributes to the mind. One implication is that we don't own our minds, that we, our individual selves, are interdependent on others for the functioning of our minds. This relational part of the definition makes some people uncomfortable. So this is what he's saying here is we don't own our minds. What is the lack of I or me in this dynamic? And when we look at, you know, when we, oh, I'll just continue. So there's the contact, and then the feeling. That's generally interpreted as pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. Generally, but now we know there's a much more primal response happening, right? The fight, flight, or freeze dynamic. And we think about how that's been conditioned, you know, for each one of us. Then we also think about, you know, we go back to the feel, you know, the feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. That neither, we don't pay much attention to. So as we, you know, it's a question, as you know, we're looking at our houses, we're examining our houses, what's not examined? And the dynamics of the mind, way we are conditioned, is that it pays, you know, just a lot less attention to, I mean, let me get this wording right. There's a whole lot it doesn't pay attention to that gets filtered out. in the experiencing, in this contact dynamic. And it's just the way we're programmed, and it's the way, as we'll get in here in a couple of days, it's the way the left hemisphere of the brain operates. If it's not familiar, if it does resonate with us, then it's less likely to be taken in. And I would suggest that that's a dynamic here with the Dharma. A lot of it, what we hear, runs counter to what the ego self wants to hear. It runs counter to its message, its sense of what it knows. And so that's where we come up against this resistance. That's where this sense of, I don't understand. And I think what I've discovered is, it's that resistance that we keep coming up against, and then pretty soon that resistance melts and we go, oh. Although all along there are these insights that we have. For me, the insight was, you know, I was sort of in listening to teaching about the 12 links. I was saying, in the language, you know, the language given, you know, with ignorance as a condition, there is this, with karmic formations as a condition, there is this. Well, I'm thinking, well, how can that not be a condition? How it just happens in our life. And then it came to me, oh, this stuff doesn't catch on the Velcro. Just doesn't catch on the Velcro. So that selfing dynamic is the Velcro. So when it comes into contact, and that feeling, and then that, you know, right there, is, you know, the intensification of the selfing, the craving and clinging, the splitting dynamic, the dualistic mind, the selfing and othering. So, for me, I'm not going to, you know, the existence, birth, old age, and death, you know, it's what we're talking about, the repeated patterns, not seeing into our habitual patterns and how they're repeated, and just imagine how often this has happens with throughout the day or throughout an hour. These patterns, you know, we're not awake to them. The reinforcing, as we're going to hear tomorrow, the reinforcing of neural pathways. Very simply. Reinforcing of our habit patterns. So the cycle of samsara, the existence of, you know, of suffering. I won't get into, you know, the teaching traditionally is, you know, the rebirth, the dynamics of rebirth into one existence, the propelling into one, from one existence into another. I'm not going to get into that right now, because I'm not ready to. But for me, especially as a therapist and as a practitioner, I see, oh, if I'm not awake, I'm in the same, stuck in the same patterns. Over and over, I'm in these cycles. Are there any questions so far?
Or just with the you said that the 12 links, what are they linking, or what's the
Okay. The language is that, for us, starting with ignorance. With ignorance as a condition, there are karmic formations. With karmic formations as a condition, there is consciousness. With consciousness as a condition, there is nama rupa, name form, and so forth. So the dynamics of causality here. Okay. Does that make sense now?
Yeah. So, they're considered a loop, not like.
Oh.
Like a net.
Well, that's where you can take this and have fun with it. You can start mapping yourself on this, actually. You can say, you know, in sort of you know, where you happen to wake up. All right, where on this do you wake up? And then as you're waking up, for instance, right, let's say right at the feeling of, right at the point of contact or feeling, right in there, is a good place to be awake to, as an experience. So, oh, this happens, you know. And then this is, you're awake to the arising. You know, you're awake to, well, you know, what's coming. And then what it might happen actually is might shed light back onto the karmic formations. That happens quite often with you. You know, it just happens. When we talk about embodied experience, it may not be clear right away, right? But then what I say, okay, when's the earliest I can remember experiencing this? What's going on in the body? And then I go, oh, you know, my first efforts at teaching mindfulness. but I, you know, I was building on what I learned in training with EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, and so you what you do is you locate a negative cognition, and it's very often is I'm not good enough, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're asked, okay. When's the earliest you can remember experiencing I'm not good enough? And it's amazing where it takes people when that question, when's the earliest that you can remember experiencing? And I was working with people, you know, teaching mindfulness, and I can't remember all the dynamics, but, you know, getting them, okay, what's coming up for you right now? And then I would ask, when's the earliest that you can remember experiencing this? And it was the facial expressions around the room was like, it was almost startling for people. But they weren't expecting it. So, you know, you can, you know, and then, or you're in the midst of the craving, clinging, you know, or okay, you pass that now, and then you're into something else. Okay. And then you say, oh. And then you can begin to track just, you know, from feeling to contact. Often, you know, these they don't, in the teaching of the 12 links, they don't include the 12 links. They sort of include like coming into contact and on into the others to be awake. But you can also then begin to talk, you know, see as you're doing this, things are lighting up, right? Ignorance is being dispelled. And then you begin to see as the more this happens, what's, you know, where are you waking up in the process here? Okay. Also, when I quickly, I think I stand to be corrected here, but I think also we can work in Yogacara here. So it's, for me, Yogacara is more condensed, streamlined version. So you have the eight consciousnesses, right? You have form, feeling. Eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, and ears, and then the sixth is mind, manas, vijnana, mind consciousness. And then you have manas, and then you have the alaya vijnana, the storehouse consciousness, right? That six, you know, so things coming into contact, right? And that six consciousness, that manas vijnana, the mind consciousness, is acting as that gatekeeper. What's allowed in, what's not allowed out, not allowed in. And then this, the seventh consciousness, manas, is what's happening, you know, what I suggest is what's happening here is we're coming into feeling, craving, and clinging. It's this proliferation. So you notice what's happening. You know, something is happening. There's this activation, and then we go into the storylines, right? Just watch that happen. Watch where it takes you. Watch where it takes you emotionally. But what's coloring all of this is the seeds of becoming in the storehouse consciousness, the Alaya Vijnana. Right? These habit patterns. So that you might be a more streamlined version, but the thing that, Yogacara came about. Remember yesterday we talked about this thing, that Batchelor said that the because of this sense of no self, then they had to come up with this argument. Well, if there's no self, then how is karma relayed on? And so that, and he goes, that was just a bunch of needless mental gymnastics. But it did lead to Yogacara. That's where it ended up. And Yogacara also, in the storehouse consciousness, spends a lot of time paying attention to the source of our conditioned patterns. Language, culture, etc. This is what we began to explore yesterday. The nature of language and all of that, and how vast it is. For me, language is, you say something, I say something, it's the same word, but do we mean the same thing? I say something, you say something, you see the expression on my face, the tone of my voice, how I use the language. We might be speaking the same language, but then how do I use it? Do I use the language as a weapon? Do I use the language to isolate, to keep you out, to make you feel inferior? And all those patterns. And so, all these seeds of becoming and watching them arise in the experience, and begin to appreciate how much the mechanism blocks out. And then what we, when we think about the conditioning too, the conditioning of our perceptual apparatus as human beings, right? It's not the same as other organisms. And so we think we see everything as it is. We think we see all there is to be seen, but do we? And in my conditioned patterns, how does that shape my experiencing seeing of you? So it begins to humble me, and when we think about these overlays that we put onto experience, and we think that's it, and we hold to it, it becomes fixed views, and that's the way we live our life and we respond to each other. So where are we with the time?
I do not have a schedule.
3 minutes over.
No.
So it would be a good place to stop for just a few questions.
Yeah, okay. A few questions.
You were talking about being stuck in a cycle. So let's say we're stuck in a cycle and we're able to watch it repeat. Okay, so that feels like a good first step, is like watching it. You're watching, and then what do you do after that? I mean, is it counterproductive to investigate it, or
no?
You just keep watching it.
So no, I think there might be different views on this. So the question is, what do we do when we recognize that we're stuck in a cycle? Or do we just keep watching it? I say we become curious about it. Notice we begin to investigate it. Very simply, from the somatic experience, somatic awareness dynamic, just what's going on? What do you feel in your body? Okay. There's an energy. There's always an energy to thinking. Emotions are chemical reactions in the body, so that's what we're feeling. And so, and then we investigate. We might say, well, what's if there's anger there right now? Anger is always a secondary emotion. So we investigate what's under this, right? But just very simply, you know, and noticing any resistance to it, any pushing away, and you know, and you can then, you know, if nothing else, you can drop right into the root of it, to the craving and aversion, to the clinging and aversion. Just be with that. That energy dynamic until you feel the release. Okay, you will feel the release. And so the Buddha said, notice when it's like this and when it's like that. When you notice these transitions, these shifts, that becomes part of the embodied memory. That's a sign that the neural pathways are changing. Okay. But very simply, bringing awareness to and being with it and spending time with it, we don't have to analyze it, you know. But you know, unless we want to, we're curious. Where did this come from? But we just simply bringing awareness to, like it's for me, it's like a parent being with a child, and the child falls and scrapes her knee, and it hurts, right? And we just simply bring that, you know, okay, it's going to be okay eventually. I'm here with you, you're safe now, you know, and that sense of presence. We're bringing that sense of presence, and that's very important. And what then begins to happen is we're working with that that dynamic that, you know, that gatekeeper. So the gatekeeper becomes less rigid. Okay, and it's a rewiring process. It's not a linear thing, you know, and then the system tends to forget. It's because the ego dynamic wants us to forget, because that's a dynamic we're working with dreams. So it's a forgetting. So it's just over and over, very patiently, and noticing when there's impatience, and then we go, oh, that's something to work with. It's another Dharma gate.
Something along those lines. So I notice I'll have these isolating thoughts. They're kind of like, you know, cognitive traps. Where, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, or always, never. Or, you know, I do this mind reading thing. Oh, she didn't look at me today. She must be pissed. You know, you can't read somebody's mind, right?
Right.
But so it isolates me from this bigger thing. So how can I, when I have those, can I still also have the big thing too?
Also have what?
A bigger sense.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's.
How can I hold those two things together?
Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening here is you know, as the dualistic mind and the selfing and other begins to fall away, we're more able to hold in multiple realities at once, and so, yeah, we can't, you know, we can't read another, you know, we might be able to have a sense of what's going on, but you know, that's an overlay. And I always recommend curiosity, you know, just to accept I don't know, but can you help me understand? When I saw that expression, that, you know. And I've also discovered it rarely has anything to do with me anyway. But it, you know, it's, you know, when you're going into there, just go, oh, you know, this is, you got this conditioned stuff coming up, which is then manufacturing this storyline, this overlay onto what's going on, and it proliferates, and just sort of pull back. And then when it feels right, see if you can explore it with the other. You know, we have to learn the language around that too. Because, you know, we can become nosy, prying type of language. Or, I just noticed this, is there something going on for you right now that I need to know about?
I'm a little bit confused now. What you just described is how mind works, our mind, and everybody else is great. And but yesterday, a couple of times, you said that you cannot use mind to study mind.
Ah.
How did you, or anyone, not you personally, how does all this information came about? How was it this study done?
The question is that yesterday I said, referring to a quote from Bodhidharma, if you use this mind to study the mind, in reality you won't understand either. If you can hope, if you can bear with us for a while longer, I hope to get to that, to see what sense of that comes to you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.